Today on Compassion Radio.
Once they have finished their process through security and health checks and everything at the refugee camp or in the city, wherever they are, we get a request from the State Department to assure the case. So basically to signing a contract saying we will accept them at the airport when they arrive.
From that point on, they trust you to deal with that needs of that person, that family, and find a way forward.
Yeah, so somewhere in those next 3 to 6 months, we get information saying this is their flight, this is when they're coming. And at that point, we are responsible for them to help ensure they begin to integrate into the community.
This is Compassion Radio with Bram Floria. On this program, Bram spends time with people who live their lives in a missional way, whether it's in a mud hut in remote Africa, a church in war-torn Ukraine, a village in Nepal devastated by an earthquake, or one of the countless Christ-centered ministries in the United States. Bram is there, tirelessly bringing you the life-changing stories of God's love, goodness, and faithfulness. In a world plagued by persecution, ethnic cleansing, genocide, corruption, poverty, and war, refugees and immigrants are often forced to leave homes, possessions, and even loved ones in a desperate effort to live in peace and safety and to find a place to call home. They arrive in the U.S. anxious to work, to contribute, to find new friends, and to belong. I'm Frank Montenegro, and today Bram talks with Jennifer Foy, the executive director of the Triad Office of World Relief in North Carolina. Now, if you have any preconceived notions about immigrants and refugees, sit tight, because Jennifer is going to set the record straight as she shares what the Lord is doing through this powerful ministry on behalf of these precious people. Here's part one of that conversation.
I'm sitting down today with Jennifer Foy of World Relief. Now, the Triad office here in north central part of North Carolina is a real strong hub for refugee resettlement and getting the church to care about those who are suffering the most. And Jennifer, thank you for sitting down with me on Compassion Radio.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
In any serious ministry, you show that you're capable of serving and serving those around you and being faithful in little. Suddenly, you're faithful in much. And you are now the executive director of this whole office.
Yeah, it's been quite a journey from volunteering for many years to becoming executive director, but almost your passion builds the more you're in it. As you use the talents you're given, it's like you're giving new ones and new opportunities open.
Some people would say you jump into nonprofit work, you're idealistic when you start, and then the weight of all the things that can't change build up on you, and you end up either discouraged, jaded, or just cynical. A lot of people in many agencies end up that way. But the culture that I've seen around World Relief and the people I've met over the years have been a very different breed. So what is it about the environment and the culture here at World Relief that makes it a positive, uplifting situation and environment so that you keep plugging along on things that seem so intractable?
Part of it is we look around the world and the need is always there, you know. In a lot of nonprofits, you can feel like there's the same people caught in the same circles. With what we're doing, it ends up being more the new people are coming and you see them succeed and move on. Hmm. And the next group comes in. But that first group then comes back and helps you serve the next group.
Yeah.
So it becomes a community. And the work with refugees, they become part of your family.
Hmm.
And many of them call World Relief their family. So we don't just work with them for 3 months and send them on their way. You know, when the babies are born and the marriages happen, we're there 5, 6 years later doing that with them still.
And many of the refugees that you've worked with have settled near enough to you, you actually can keep contact. And the families, I want to talk about those that actually bring refugees in and help them to not just adjust to a new culture, but to find a new family, as you said.
Yeah.
It's not like an Ellis Island thing where you're just processing them, stamping them out, moving them on. The Christian ethic of reaching out to people in the name of Jesus means there's an eternal connection, whether they even recognize it or not.
One of the things World Relief really focuses on is a relational volunteer experience. Hmm. We do very few transactional volunteer experiences. Our goal really is to invest into the refugee and invest with our time, because the love and that relationship is what sustains the refugee. Anyone can walk in and give them a roll of toilet paper and, yep, they have toilet paper for the week.
Right.
But you walk in and you become a part of their family, it's important. From my own experience, I was working with a family before I started working for World Relief, and I was a volunteer connected to them, and the mom called me in tears one day, and I can hear her 7-year-old daughter screaming in the background. Something had happened with school, and there was a paper that needed to be signed, but Mom didn't understand what the paper was, and she wasn't going to sign it without the understanding. Now, that seems logical to you and I. So after work, I go over and I check. It's a field trip permission form. Well, field trip doesn't translate well,
right,
even for someone that speaks English. And so she's not understanding why she would sign a piece of paper to send her child to a field when she should be in school studying. The ultimate result of it is she happily signed it, realizing she was going to a science museum and it was going to be educational. But the daughter was seeing it as, Mom's not allowing me to do it. I'm going to be isolated in school once again. I'm going to be different once again. But that relationship of having an American friend, an American family to reach out to, solves so many problems just in that little piece. So the relational volunteers make the biggest impact.
I'm hearing in that story something that I've run across a number of times, and that is the idea of literalism. And then you have many people that literally want to help people. Just tell me what to do. Tell me how to help this person get their roll of toilet paper or their welcome packet or something, and then send them on their way. And so in their mind, they're literally helping by these kind of transactional environments where you're just doing the thing. And we know that Jesus is always appealing to the Marys instead of the Marthas. He knows he's got Marthas galore out there. But he wants people to sit with him, to know him. And that's the most scary thing for the Christian community, is to say, aside from my politics, whether I'm pro-immigration or anti-immigration, whatever it is, and Jesus says, go sit with this person. I've got something here for you in doing this, is a radical transformation for many folks that are dearly in love with the church and with the Word of God and with Jesus himself. But they're being called to something very dangerous in their own minds. How do you punch through that kind of attitude for those who say they want to help, but they're scared to death to do it?
I talk to people a lot, and I challenge them. Do one thing. Go and share a meal. I mean, the idea of communion, that way that Jesus sat with the disciples and so many other people to share a meal to bridge that gap. And it's amazing if you can get a community member even to go with me to a family I know and to share a meal. You see how similar you are across all the cultural differences, the things that happen around a dinner table, and that sharing a meal will kind of change things for people. It breaks down barriers. I mean, conversations about how you eat your meal. Do you eat it with your hands? Do you eat it with silverware? Or laughing as someone tries to conform to your culture, and really you don't care. You know, I think the biggest key to it is getting people to get through that first piece. You know, small talk with someone from a different language that doesn't speak your language is difficult.
Yes, it is.
And so it's intimidating. But if you can get people to share a meal, so many things happen.
Yeah.
I think Jesus gave us so many examples of where that meal was central. And so I really encourage people to use that as a way.
We're talking about kingdom culture. So if Jesus invites us to his wedding feast, he wants every meal to be a celebration. We find that even with our home church back in Texas, where we sit down with new couples that are coming into the faith, and they don't know what to do or how to act Christian, but they desperately want community. And so we do that. We actually have a meal before we even start having a worship service. And if we don't get to all the stuff on the agenda, fine. If we actually sat around the table and heard stories of where they're coming from and where they're going, and laugh a lot, and find some things to pray about, and then pray together over those things, you've developed a new culture, which is one that's founded on Christ and that he's centered to it. And he's the one that actually made this thing possible.
And I think something that people shy away from is that even our Muslim refugees, if in that meal, in that conversation, I say, can I pray for you? They are very open and welcoming to that. That concept of praying for one another overtakes culture, overtakes religious boundaries. I've never found someone offended by that question.
Neither have I. In refugee camps, you're sitting down with somebody and they've laid their life bare before you, and where their fears are, what their hopes are for their kids and for themselves. And you say, I have nothing to offer you right now but Jesus. Can I pray for you in his name? It's like, yes, yes, yes.
You're listening to Compassion Radio with Bram Floria. There's a lot more coming up, so please stay with us. Here's a word from Bram Floria.
Hi, friends. Just a quick note to say thanks for your encouragement and support through these summer months. We've made some real progress in our summer giving appeal, but we have a long ways to go before we meet our goal. I hope that you've been praying about how you can partner with this one-of-a-kind radio ministry. We're here to encourage and inspire you in your daily faith walk, and to challenge you to live it out in practical ways, right where you live and around the world. All the guests on Compassion Radio are invited to share their moving and motivational stories so that you will benefit and so that they will receive the kind of support they richly deserve. And you make it possible. Without your generous support, these stories would never make it on the air to your ears and hearts. If you haven't supported the unique mission of Compassion Radio before, I hope you'll choose now to do so. If you have supported us in the past, please keep it up. And thank you for making Compassion Radio part of your day. God bless you.
If you'd like to support Compassion Radio, call 800-868-2478 right now or go to CompassionRadio.com. That's 800-868-2478 or CompassionRadio.com. If you'd like to make your giving super easy, you can just text the word COMPASSION to 53445. That's the word COMPASSION to 53445. You can also mail your tax-deductible donation to Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. That's P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And thank you so much.
We're always on mission. This is Compassion Radio with Bram Floria. And now, back to Compassion Radio with Bram Floria.
In refugee camps, you're sitting down with somebody and they've laid their life bare before you, and what their fears are, what their hopes are for their kids and for themselves. And you say, I have nothing to offer you right now but Jesus. Can I pray for you in his name? Mm-hmm. It's like, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. People seem so shy about bringing up religion, and yet it's so central to everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, the Muslim culture has an understanding of Jesus. Now, a very different one than how we see Jesus, but they have an understanding of who he is.
Yes.
And there is no shame in offering that to them and offering to pray for them in that way. And they're very accepting and open to it, which in itself could be life-changing.
You've had a number of refugees come through in the past few years. I know the numbers that are coming from certain parts of the world have trickled out because of the politics of the time and the way the State Department has been instructed not to allow certain types of people in. Tell me about the people that have actually arrived here in the Carolinas that you've had a chance to minister to in the past couple of years.
So primarily they have been sub-Saharan Africa, so a lot of Congolese, but also Ethiopian and Eritrean. All three tend to be primarily Christian. And then a lot of Bhutanese and Burmese from Southeast Asia. But even those, a lot of them are family reunifications.
Okay.
So people that most likely have been in a refugee camp for years. So an example, the same mom that I spoke about earlier, she arrived in 2013.
Five tough years without family around.
Yeah. When she left the camp in Namibia, her brother did not resettle at the same time. So as a younger brother, she left him there by himself, and he arrived 2 weeks ago.
That must have been quite a day.
It was. One of my favorite pictures, I think, in my phone now is the picture of him meeting his three-month-old nephew for the first time. You know, a lot of the people coming now are those people that have been lingering in camps for years.
Yeah.
So it's been tough, but I think there's been a lot of joy for a lot of my staff in seeing some of those people finally coming through the system.
How early in the process of people trying to immigrate to America are you involved or aware of what's happening with their cases?
It depends. I mean, if there's family here, the family updates us and tells us.
Okay.
But most likely, we don't learn about someone until they are 3 to 6 months from coming.
Okay.
That's the average. Sometimes it's even less than that. But generally what happens is once they have finished their process through security and health checks and everything at the refugee camp or in the city, wherever they are, we get a request from the State Department to assure the case. So basically to signing a contract saying we will accept them at the airport when they arrive.
From that point on, they trust you to deal with that needs of that person, that family, and find a way forward.
Yeah. So somewhere in those next 3 to 6 months, we get information saying this is their flight, this is when they're coming. And at that point, we are responsible for them to help ensure they begin to integrate into the community.
And how far geographically are you allowed to work on placements for the people that you are entrusted with?
Technically, 100 miles.
Okay.
We generally try and stay within the city limits of Winston-Salem and High Point, primarily because they don't have transportation. They need to have a way to have access to us as a resource. But also, if we send them out too far, too small of a community, there isn't transportation. And most of these cultures are also very community-based. So if you pull them away from anything they're familiar with or away from anyone that understands and has those similar cultural backgrounds, they're going to naturally migrate back to them anyway. As soon as they're able to move and travel, they will. It's just natural.
If we look around our own country, and I think about the countryside, what it's like to be in the woods of the East or the big open skies of the West, I have a concept of this as my country. And I've traveled all of these states. Not Alaska yet. I'll get there someday. But having experienced America all my life and the scope of the place, I know kind of what to expect of the people when I arrive there. I know what the twang of their tongue is going to be, but I understand the language. I'll understand the words. I get it. When I travel, I know where I am. I'm in America. When you're completely new and not understanding even half the words that are coming at you, to sense that you are free is not easy. In fact, you may look around, you see nothing but a vast prison. You have no way to be with people that you're safe with. That would be the first, I think, emotional response from anybody. Even if they were wanting to come here, just the sheer scope of it would be difficult.
Yeah, and even sometimes once they get here, they don't understand their freedom.
Yeah.
So an illustration of that would be, used to be one of my favorite things, is to take Cuban refugees to the grocery store.
Yeah.
Refugees in a camp and Cubans generally have lived their life off of rations.
Right.
The average refugee is in a camp for 17 years. So you take a Cuban refugee to the grocery store for the first time with money, and they're kind of hold back, and they're like, okay, what is mine to have? Because they're wondering, what is their ration?
Right.
And to explain to them that they have this much money, whatever that money will buy,
that's your
they
ration.
Can have anything in that store. The pure joy in seeing them for the first time get to choose what they're going to have for dinner. You know, it's a different kind of freedom than you and I think, but it's those little things that we take so for granted.
I had a friend who was from Hungary who had a candy aisle in front of him when he first came to America and discovered that there was more than one kind of chocolate. He had a meltdown.
I can see it. I can imagine.
Even to this day, that man has gone back and done incredible things in Eastern Europe, and he will always, for the fun of it, when we get to Europe, will send me a Snickers bar to just remind me that he has choice now. It's a reminder that with opportunity now comes responsibility. And for him, his story was that he wanted to start thinking about others and remind them that they were remembered, and that he had the capacity now to remind them in tangible ways, gifts as a measure of love.
Yeah.
But these kind of new freedoms often offer new opportunities to minister to others. What do you find from these Christians, especially, that are coming from Central Africa? They've mostly been persecuted where they are. When they get here and they discover a different Christian culture completely from what they're used to, how do they handle that transition culturally to other Christians they've never met before?
I think there's a grief process when someone arrives here. I mean, we think that everyone should be just thrilled and excited the second they arrive in the United States, but there's almost a grief process.
We'll hear more of this conversation next time on Compassion Radio. If you've missed any part of today's broadcast, you can listen again anytime just by opening up a browser on your computer, smartphone, or tablet and going to CompassionRadio.com. While you're there, go ahead and check out our newsletter to find out more about this ministry. And please think about signing up for our email updates. Again, it's CompassionRadio.com. Now, if this broadcast is a blessing to you, would you please consider three things? First, please pray for us. Your prayers are vital to the effectiveness of this ministry. Second, would you please tell a friend about Compassion Radio? Sharing this broadcast will help us reach as many people as possible with the encouraging reports Bram brings us from the mission field, both here in the U.S. and abroad. And finally, would you please consider supporting this ministry financially? Compassion Radio is 100% listener-supported. That means it's your gifts that make it possible for us to continue. Now, there's a couple of ways you can get a hold of us. You can call us right now at 800-868-2478, or you can go to CompassionRadio.com, and when you're there, just click on the Donate button. Again, it's 800-868-2478. 2478 or CompassionRadio.com. Now, if you'd really like to make your giving super easy, you can just text the word COMPASSION to 53445. That's the word COMPASSION, COMPASSION, to 53445. And last but certainly not least, if you want to go old school and mail us your tax-deductible donation, great. Just send it to Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. That's P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Thanks a lot. And thanks for taking time out of your busy day to listen. We are so very thankful for you. And please be sure to join us again for more Compassion Radio with Bram Floria. This program is sponsored by Compassion Radio Ministries and your generous financial support.